Welcome back to the Man Cave Caucus podcast. And you know, this is the midweek edition. We are in the 403A Capitol studio today. And so welcome back. We got a lot to talk about today. And here with me in the studio, I have a special guest. His name is Representative Dan Stacey. Welcome, Dan.
Well, it's good to be with you. I've been a fan here of your podcast for, well, since the inception. I've been listening to it and enjoying it. And so it's an honor to be on your podcast finally.
So you're saying that we at least have one fan?
You have one fan. Man, I know for a fact because I've listened to every single one of them.
Wow. That's encouraging. So, I mean, you heard it right here, folks. We do have a fan who has listened to every episode.
Man, isn't that special?
You're what's keeping us afloat, Dan. Somehow.
I know it's just me.
I'm not sure what afloat means, but I appreciate you listening to the podcast. I hope it's been entertaining and informative for you. That's kind of what we're hoping for to do with the podcast. So this week has been an interesting one. We got a lot going on in Jefferson City. We're in the last 2 weeks of session, and you know how it is. There's gridlock over in the Senate, as usual, as per usual, all that going on. And we got a few good things we're trying to get accomplished, good conservative legislation, as always. But I want to talk about something that is kind of outside the building but very connected to, you know, what we do here in politics as a servant of the people. So Saturday was the Republican State Convention. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit on the previous podcast and kind of defined what that is, what the purpose of the Republican State Convention is, you know, all the things that take place. And we actually went methodically through that with the regular podcast guys, and, you know, you had some that really didn't have any idea of what this is, and we explained that, and I went through some of the things that happened on that day. But since then, it's been quite interesting to see the responses of certain people and how that this has played out, and how, because you and I were there, mm-hmm, right?
Yes, we were.
So let's talk about that a little bit. I wasn't even actually planning on going to the convention this year. I had a lot of things I needed to do that weekend. I needed to mow my grass. You know, there's a lot of things I needed to do on that Saturday, and that was the only day I would have to do it because of church on Sunday. And then I thought I had a graduation to speak at on Sunday afternoon, but I somehow got the dates mixed up. So I did not, but I thought I did. Nevertheless, there were delegates that were going to be missing and alternates that were going to be missing from my county. I was an alternate delegate on that slate to go to the state convention. And so my Newton County Republican Central Committee chairman, which happens to be Nick Myers, called me and said, would you be willing to come and be there because there's going to be people missing and we may not have all of our delegates if we don't have some alternates that will show up. And I said, sure, I'll be there. So that's the reason why I ended up being there. I never talked to another person about it other than my wife. I didn't call any other representatives. Did I give you a call by any chance?
No, as a matter of fact, I was quite surprised to see you there. I was glad to see you there. You know, in fact, there were quite a few representatives that were there. I was surprised to see all of them there, but I was glad to see all of them there. I didn't, you know, I've attended every convention we've had since 2012.
Okay.
And so I've been involved in this for some time now, but I just frankly, what, you know, I just showed up. I you know, our legislative days have been just crazy here.
Yes.
And we've been just focused on what's going on here at the Capitol. And typically, in fact, I'll just tell you, I've always considered myself really very grassroots and very connected to the party at many, many levels. However, this year I was not able to give attention to this convention really at all, practically nothing other than just figure out what the date was and show up for mm-hmm. it. That was really all the planning that I did. So, you know, I got there and I was glad to see people I knew. But when I actually got to the building, I, typically in years past, I've been prepared. I've read the party platform that was proposed or whatever else, and all of the things that you do to get prepared for the convention. And this particular time, I didn't have time to do any of that. So when I got there, I barely even visited with anybody. In fact, I didn't. I went and found my seat right as soon as I got there. I got there really early, as soon as the doors opened, and I was one of the first in the room to find my seat. And I got the packet that was there, and glad to see that there were some things already there. Certainly the party platform, the proposed party platform, that frankly I hadn't read at that point. So I wanted to read the party platform because I knew that was one of the things that we were going to discuss. And
so let me clarify that. So what you're talking about is the proposed party platform that the platform committee had put together.
Yeah.
For the state convention, right?
Right.
So let's explain that a little bit, because I think a lot of our listeners may not quite understand exactly how that works. So that committee is appointed by the state committee, right?
Right, right. Well,
so
actually, yeah.
Voted on.
Correct.
Yeah. By the state committee. They mm-hmm. pick members.
The chair picks members, and then they're qualified by the state committee. So,
and the state committee is voted on by the people.
Yeah, mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah.
So,
well, actually, it's voted on by each senatorial district. The county committees have senatorial districts, and those senatorial districts will ultimately elect the county or the state party chairs or state party representatives that go on to represent their counties in the
sure.
State party.
So the leadership of the party is elected by the people,
sure.
And they're given authority under the party agreed upon rules that
right.
they can appoint those committees to work on the platform. So the platform committee is a group of people then that spent a lot of hours actually looking at all the amendments to the platform that came from all the congressional districts, right?
Correct.
And the counties too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So all of that was looked at and vetted and gone through and read by people who, several on that committee, I believe, are attorneys, people who really carefully, cautiously look through all of the wording and all of the things in those amendments. So all of those were gone through, because I think one of the things we need to point out is there is a narrative that's being spread, a false narrative. There are many, and we're going to talk about some of those, about what happened Saturday. But there is a narrative, one of the things I've seen in several places, that that all the amendments were ignored that came from the county and the congressional districts in the platform committee's proposal. And I say that that's false, because they did look at all of those. Maybe they didn't accept all of those, or maybe they didn't accept everything from each of one of those, but they did look at them all and consider them all in what would be going into that document that is our identifying document as our party platform.
Yeah, sure. And just one other thing, one other factor I think they used to choose what actually made it into the platform was that these amendments were similar from multiple congressional district caucuses. So in other words, it wasn't just one caucus with one amendment that was unique
right.
that came forward. Actually, all of them were presented. Every single amendment was presented, but there was some effort made by the platform committee to determine whether a particular idea had universal support from the entire state, which, frankly, our party platform, our state party platform, should have that universal
right.
support.
You can't let one amendment from one district, for instance, go into the platform and be representative of all the districts when none of the other districts offered that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's something that the party platform committee would look at.
Sure.
Because if you have one amendment from one person, that doesn't mean it's representative mm-hmm. of the entire state, of who we would say we are
right.
as Republicans.
Right. And I'll give you an example of how that process plays out typically, at least as it related to amendment that I'm near and dear to my heart. Your listeners probably are aware that I've been here 8 years, and for all 8 years I've been an advocate for closed primaries.
Yes.
And one of the things that is an important thing for our party is really vetting our candidates. Mm-hmm. That's a conversation that's been going on for some time. And one of the aspects I believe that's probably the most important aspect of selecting our candidates is actually giving the voters the opportunity to select their candidates, Republican standard bearers. I think only Republicans should be the ones who select those without interference from independent voters or Democrat voters. Democrat voters and independent voters, by very nature, do not have standing to select a Republican standard bearer.
Right.
And in fact, in our state, that's part of the challenge that we have in one of the disappointments that we have.
You and I both have worked on that issue.
Yeah, sure. So our Republican candidates oftentimes are selected in our primaries by Democrats or independent voters. And therefore, your body that you have representing you in your Missouri House is not primarily or only selected by Republicans. Yeah. Therefore, they don't behave like Republicans.
Yes.
In fact, I'd tell you, to be honest with you, as I've been working through this issue for the last 8 years, many of the people that say they don't support closed primaries say to me, to my face, that they wouldn't be elected but for the Democrat vote.
Amazing.
Isn't that interesting? So, that is the reason, in my view, that's the ultimate government-sponsored election fraud, basically.
Yeah, a way to meddle in the other party's elections.
Sure.
It's really what it is.
So anyway, I kind of got off the topic here at hand, but that's been – so there was a part of the committee process allowed for exclusion of that part of our platform for a period of time, the initial draft. And so there were a number of conventions that agreed with me that should be a primary area of concern for our platform.
Yeah.
And so multiple CD conventions proposed that amendment. So when that amendment came forward into the platform committee that was ultimately responsible for giving us our document that we had, they saw that it was a broadly supported idea, and so they included that. What's interesting, I'm probably one of the most informed people in our state regarding the details of closed primary because it's been a primary issue in my legislative career.
Pun intended.
Yeah, so to speak.
Primary issue.
Yeah, primary issue. Yes, indeed. And in fact, I've not had my legislative career soiled by any way by having success in getting that passed.
Right.
In other words, I haven't been successful.
Well, I know, and that's the thing that's frustrating. I think the closest we ever got, I had a standalone bill.
Mm-hmm.
You had a standalone bill as well
on
that. I had another bill that's dealing with moving elections to November.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We both worked on those issues, and we've never been able to get a consensus yet in the House even,
let alone
the Senate. Mm-hmm. To get that issue done. And I will say that probably most of the pushback on that issue has come from I know this term has been changed and people have different definitions of it now, but you and I, over the last, your 8 years, my 6 years, would say that the more moderate or establishment side of the party has been the ones that have pushed back against that. Would you say that's correct?
I'd say that's absolutely correct. But getting back now off that particular policy issue, but the amendment that was put forth to kind of describe the process, even though I might be well-versed in the weeds and I was very married to my words that I offered in my amendment, I didn't people who were part of the platform committee, which I was not part of the platform committee, they chose to alter the words so that it fit the form and style more of the party platform that that they were creating, because the form and style of the party platform, in fact, the party platform is really at the end of the day a marketing document.
Yeah.
It's a document that basically tells who we are, and it needs to be coherent from start to finish. It needs to have a style and form that matches itself, and to amend that willy-nilly really compromises that purpose of the platform.
Yes.
And so, but they changed the words. Now, if I would have been really, you know, I liked the words that I proposed.
Right.
I favored those words. But at the end of the day, it's really not about me. It's about the party. It's mm-hmm. about moving the party forward. And the platform committee determined that the words that they used were the best words that represented that particular thing in the context of the entire party platform.
Right.
So it would have been out of line for me to go to the convention and try to convince the convention that my words were better than their words.
Yeah.
I mean, that just would have been.
Or that it wasn't even considered, right? Because it was considered.
Oh,
your
yeah.
amendment was considered.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Even though they changed it a little bit,
yeah,
and
sure.
put it in the proposed platform, you would never say they never took my amendment or they didn't consider my amendment.
Yeah, and in fact, I would tell you some of the amendments that were offered were actually already in the platform.
Yes.
One of the things that I encouraged the body to do at the beginning of the convention is as I mentioned, I sat down and I read the entire document. You know, it took a while. I'm a slow reader, and people would come up every once in a while and talk to me, which, you know, I wanted to be polite, but I was frankly pretty focused on trying to get through that document, and so I wanted to make sure I kind of understood what was being proposed. I wanted to understand what was being proposed, and so. So at the end of the day, or when we started looking at the whether we were going to accept or reject the platform as a whole, I encouraged people not to vote against it who had not read it, because mm-hmm. frankly, many of the things that they were proposing were probably already reflected in the
yes.
document already. In fact, I would tell you that's true.
Yeah. And so it seems as though they had something in mind they wanted to accomplish. They didn't even want to consider anything else. So they were actually doing the very thing that they're accusing the platform committee of doing, and that's disregarding amendments, right?
Because yeah.
that's exactly what they were doing. We don't want to even read the proposed platform, which I believe, if you read it, was mm-hmm. the most conservative platform ever introduced by a platform committee in the history of our state.
Yes, I would
for
agree
2024.
With that. Mm-hmm.
But many of them, like you said, did not read that at all. They had in mind they wanted to do these floor amendments so they could put things in the platform on their own. And I think there were different motivations and reasons of why they wanted to do that. And we'll talk about some of that. But for the sake of time, we need to kind of get
sure.
through this. One of the things I want to mention before we go further into what actually happened on that day, there's several things we need to discuss on that. But a little history. So I've been in the legislature 6 years. You've been in, this is your senior year.
Yep, I'm done.
Eight years.
Yeah.
So we've been working together, I think, since I came in. We became fast friends. We think a lot alike on policy. We think a lot alike in a lot of ways. We're both people of faith, involved in ministry in the past. Hmm. You know, just many things that we obviously clicked
sure.
on. And obviously because of that, worked on policy together. When I came in, there was a conservative caucus in the House, and it was something that even before I was elected, I spoke with some members of that caucus and, you know, told them that I would like to be a part of that. That
sure.
I, you know, my intention was to be a conservative voice because my district is a conservative district.
Sure.
And so since then, we have worked together in that conservative caucus in different facets. And it's changed some over time as far as its purpose and how we address, you know, things in the legislature and maybe the tactics of how we work through that. But I think the fundamentals of that conservative caucus have remained steadfast
sure.
over those years. So talk a little bit about, just for a couple minutes, a little bit about your involvement in the conservative caucus, my involvement in that, and what we have tried to do with that group.
Okay, sure. Well, as you mentioned, I've been here 8 years, and the Conservative Caucus as an entity started 2 years before I came to the legislature. And there were some who had identified me early on as somebody that might share their values, and they invited me into the caucus before I was actually elected, because the general had not occurred. I'd been elected in the primary, but I didn't have a general election, so I was a representative elect at that point. But at any rate, they invited me. There was no real formal process in those days. It was just people that kind of recognized people that hopefully were going to behave like them or whatever. So, or think like them. And so they invited me in. My first year, we had 20 people that were part of the Conservative Caucus. My second term, we have 2 year terms. In my second term, some people call that your sophomore term, we had 30 people in the mm-hmm. Conservative Caucus.
And that's where I came in.
Yeah, it's where, and I was thrilled with that. Frankly, I thought we were growing is great. And there was still a kind of a growing of the purpose and the process at that point when you came in, and how we selected the caucus and those things. But we started somewhere in that process, starting not just using as a benchmark your friends or people you thought were shared your ideas or who you liked or whatever that those kinds of arbitrary ways. We started moving toward outside groups that had scorecards that kind of matched up with the Republican Party platform, because early on, that's really what guided the Conservative Caucus was the Republican Party platform.
Right.
And so if the goal was the people who voted by the values of the Republican Party platform were the people that we wanted in the Conservative Caucus.
Yeah.
And so at any rate, we started defining that. And as time moved on, what we've got now, my junior year, my sixth year, we had 40 of us.
Mm-hmm.
And my senior year now, we have 50 of us. So we have been a part of shepherding the group to grow the Conservative Caucus in the House of Representatives all the years I've been here, which I'm thrilled about. Hopefully next year, if you guys have 60 people in the Conservative Caucus, you'll probably be electing leadership, which would be wonderful. But at any rate, looking at that, we've used scorecards, outside scorecards, to determine who actually is in the Conservative Caucus. In fact, who is a voting member, and then we have some provisional members, people who have a 85% lifetime voting record. And that's another thing we do. It's not, a freshman, we look back on what we might invite a provisional member on some early vote as a freshman to be a part of the caucus, but the ongoing group is scored with outside scorecards. And so those who have an 85 or better record are what we call voting members, and those who have an 80 to 85% record are what we call provisional members. And what's the biggest difference? Well, the voting people have a potential to shape the direction.
And the leadership.
And the leadership of the Conservative Caucus. Those are the people that we feel are the most positioned to shepherd the group moving forward. And so that I think we've put something in place that can be effective moving forward. We're hopeful it is. It's going to be up to you and others to shepherd that. But I hope the process we put in place will help yield that. So
yeah.
Anyway, that's my
yeah,
take
so
on
again,
Conservative Caucus.
To summarize that, there's a pretty strict vetting process right there for who would be in the Conservative Caucus based on voting record.
Yeah.
Any other members that don't have a voting record are provisional because we want to see how they are actually going to vote. And for me, that is the bottom line. That is the baseline of what it means to be a conservative, and that is, how have you voted on legislation? How have you worked on policies that we believe to be conservative, that uphold the values
of the party platform?
Of the party platform, at the very least.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think it's important for people to know that and to see a little bit of that history as well. And so we're constantly working on things and not only on policy, but on the process here in the legislature with that group.
Yeah, and I don't like to do these kinds of things generally, but I just want to commend you. You have the highest voting record of your class. You have a lifetime score. You have the highest of your class, and in anybody who's been in the legislature as long as you. You have the highest one.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a senior. I have the highest one in the senior class.
In your class.
So, yeah. I mean, you know, it's not so like we're
you could say, one could say that you and I, at least in our classes, are the highest voting members when it comes to conservative policy that is scored by
others.
Groups. Yeah, by other people, not us.
Mm-hmm.
Other people outside of this building that scrutinize every vote. They look at all these issues and they come to the conclusion regarding those basic principles of freedom and tax policy and all those other things when it comes to conservative values, and they determine that. So, again, a very stringent vetting process, even when it comes to the members of the conservative caucus, and then what we bring people in with is a score of several different groups over those policies.
Sure.
So now let's get back a little bit to what happened Saturday with the state convention. So, as the day played out, you know, we've talked about this already. There was kind of a coup that came in, unseated the chair mm-hmm. of the convention, the temporary chair
right.
for all purposes,
sure.
Who happens to be the chairman of the state party. And there was a lot of different things going on with that. There was, you know, a lot of emotion in the room. There's people that are frustrated, right?
Sure.
Which.
I'm frustrated too.
Like, it's the reason why I ran for office.
Yes.
I mean, I was frustrated. I directed my frustrations toward, look, here's a way that I can put myself on the line to serve the people, to actually address the problems I'm frustrated with. I think one of the issues with what I'm seeing from some of these factions that are rising up who, you know, would define themselves as grassroots, but I think their definition may not include all the grassroots,
yeah,
because I would look
true.
At you and I as grassroots as well, and that is closest to the people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, it matters to understand that when it comes to, you know, what people define in those terms, you know, because I'm always asking that. Well, you can use a word, but what's the definition of that word? What's the definition
sure.
of establishment? What's the definition of grassroots? What's the definition of a conservative, right? So emotion was a big part of what happened on Saturday. And, you know, from my experience, I think you would agree, it's never good to legislate from emotion, for sure, at mm-hmm. least solely on that. You know, obviously we're human beings and emotion is a part of us. God created us that way. However, when people are frustrated, often the emotion is what drives their decisions. And I think sometimes those frustrations are misdirected toward things that actually don't address the real problem.
Sure.
It don't actually get to the root of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's you know, someone who rises as a leader who says, put your trust in me, you know, follow me,
mm-hmm.
and I will satisfy your frustrations.
Right.
Right? But, I mean, if you look throughout history of where people have done that, it usually ends in disaster when you put all your faith and your trust in a person.
Yeah. Now, it's always ended in tyranny, actually.
Exactly. Because of human nature.
Yeah.
Right? But also the fact that, you know, there are other things, there are solid principles that matter way more than just putting your faith and your trust in a person, a human
right.
being, who we know is flawed.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone could disagree with that human beings are flawed. No one is perfect.
Yeah.
Jesus was the only one
and I'm not
who
him.
Was perfect, and we are not him. So, you know, again, if you don't have solid principles and foundational principles that you understand, that you believe in, that you adhere to, it's easily, you know, it's easy to waver from what will really address the problem, and the issue that you're frustrated about. And I think Saturday was actually a really good example of that. You know, again, people were upset, they're frustrated, you know, thinking that the establishment is trying to suppress them or suppress their voice or their, you know, not take into consideration the things that they're frustrated about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe some of that was true with some people, but with the event that actually took place, there's a lot of misconceptions of what happened. You know, there were things, and we can go through some of these. There were things where people were saying that it was purposely delayed in the beginning for the, you know, for the express purpose of trying to subvert what some of the, again, what they would term themselves grassroots were trying to accomplish that day and putting their people in place and getting their issues in the platform and all of that. And that's just simply not true.
Yeah.
There was human error.
Sure.
There was logistical errors. There was technical errors. There was computer programs that crashed and didn't work like they had hoped they would. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of things. It was like the perfect storm
exactly.
of logistical problems, human error that happened and went wrong that caused the delay of seating the delegates. Mm-hmm. And seating the delegates and knowing that every single one of those people were a voter that were actually voted by the people to be there is extremely important.
Sure.
Right? Because yeah. we believe in election integrity.
Right.
Right? So if it takes 4 hours to verify that every person there is a verified voter, would that be the right thing to do?
Yeah. And let me speak to that just a minute, because I think there was a lot of focus on that particular aspect of it. I'm not sure that was the biggest challenge. What I believe the biggest challenge was there was delegates that were supposed to be seated, which came and actually checked in and had the proper credentials and came in and seated.
Yes.
And then there were a bunch of holes that needed to be filled. There were a bunch of alternates that were sitting in the back of the room. And what the computer program was supposed to do, I believe, was to try to streamline the process of figuring out where these holes were and then move the people forward in the order that they were selected
right.
in an efficient way.
Because they had to be in order.
Yeah, they had to be in order. The first person that was the alternate
yes.
was the first person that
a lot
was
of people didn't realize
yeah,
that.
Which frankly, if
even
you think—
Even some of the organizers, I think.
Yeah. What I'd just say is that this is a very detailed process, and because of how detailed it is, it becomes fair that way.
Yes.
But and if you don't—
then someone could question.
Yeah, they could question your you know
the entire process.
Yeah, you know who you chose your person or whatever else. No, it was just the way the list. You know, you need to go by order of the list. So bottom line is, I think that computer program that was supposed to make it easy, they'd really hoped it was going to work, and they kept trying to make it work, and it just didn't work, and so eventually they bailed on that process, which. Was what they had to do, and I don't think they were properly prepared to bail on the
right.
proper
they
process.
Didn't have that in place.
Yeah.
So then it went. That's when they kind of said, "Well, we're going to do this the old-fashioned way,"
yeah.
and that is read off the list. Everybody stand and check them off one by one by their name.
Do you know? Remember how long that took?
It took hours.
Yeah, it took a long time.
Yes.
It took maybe a couple hours
yeah.
to do that, and so. That's highly unfortunate. It
yes.
really is. But that was not done with some kind of ill intent or intent to...
No, actually, the reverse was true. It was done to try to make sure that they were 100% correct and that it was a fair process.
Right.
And that we could 100% say that those delegates were verified voters.
Yeah.
That's the reason why it took so long.
Yeah, that were verified to be seated in the order that they
yes.
were seated. Which at the end of the day, you want your delegates to be fairly in the room.
Yes.
So it wasn't like we were waiting for people to come into the room. I mean, the place was closed.
Right.
I mean, they weren't letting new people in the
right.
room or whatever else. They were trying to figure out from the alternates who and what order in which CD district and
right.
which county and everything
they
else
should be seated.
That's a complicated problem if you're not set up
well,
properly to do it.
Well, you got almost 2,000 people there.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That are trying to be put into all these within their congressional districts on these lists mm-hmm. in the proper order. Some of them were coming out alphabetical order and you can't do that.
Yeah, that was messed up.
Right. So then they had to go back through that and find the original list. Who knows who had the original list and who were, you know, so there's so many logistical things. So that's one thing I wanted to mention. In the meantime, as you can imagine, when you're several hours into this, after we did start the meeting on time, but now we're waiting on this committee report from the delegate. What's the term that was used? The credentialing committee.
Yeah.
So again, there's been false information saying that the meeting didn't start until 1 o'clock in the afternoon or 2 o'clock. That's false. The meeting started on time, but we were waiting on this process that's so important because you can't have a meeting unless you know how many verified voters are there.
Right. And that has to do with that has to do with the credentialing process.
Yes.
And we didn't know, you know, there were in the delegate chairs, there were holes and we didn't know who was supposed to be out of the alternates, who was supposed to be sitting in that. They had to figure that out. And that was part of the credentialing process that ultimately the computer failed.
Yes.
And so, you know, there was no there's all this stuff like there was this big, I don't know, conspiracy or something to slow things down. It was just I tend to think of things in many times in spiritual ways. You know, I can't say for sure that a spiritual storm took place here, but I believe there was many things that took place in this convention that probably were not of God.
Yeah.
You know, and may have been confusion that was instigated, frankly, from Satan himself.
So yeah, and so I'll mention, so I do know for a fact from some of the things I'm reading from some of the faction, you know, I went through the transcript of a podcast where people were talking about this, and it was a very long, I don't know how many pages, like 20 pages probably of a transcript. And you know, from their perspective, they were saying people were telling them that they were purposefully delaying the process.
Yeah.
So there was false information being spread among this group to get them worked up,
and
all emotional and angry.
Sure.
Anger was mentioned several times in some of these accounts that people were becoming angry, and you have a crowd that large and they become angry and become emotional.
Sure.
There's going to be consequences of that, right? People, and that's what happened. People were yelling and cussing and making, you know, running up to the microphones, making random motions out of order because we didn't even have the voters there yet. We couldn't proceed in our business. And so you can imagine how that quickly can get out of hand in that kind of situation. So, you know, that's one thing I found out, that people were, disseminating false information purposely to get people riled up.
Sure.
And again, you're tapping into frustrations that are probably legitimate frustrations.
Right, yeah.
But you're directing it at the wrong thing, at the wrong people, in the wrong direction to actually address your frustrations.
It's like saying something in a theater, fire or something. You know, basically that's really what was going on.
Right.
Now, whether that was, I don't know. I don't know the intent on that. Frankly, I can't speak to that. But that ultimately was the effect. That basically we riled people up, I think, totally unnecessarily.
Yes. And a lot of those people, I think, are good people that got caught up in that.
Sure.
That's just the way these kind of things go.
Sure.
They probably didn't have ill intent. They have legitimate frustrations, but they got caught up in it.
But
yeah, exactly. I was not happy that it was delayed.
But I did sit in my seat and just calmed myself and didn't contribute to the confusion.
Yeah. And in the meantime, they tried to pass time by bringing up some of the statewide officers to speak that are currently elected in the state of Missouri, and they were booed, and there was just a lot of raucous, you know, responses to those speeches. It was all, it was like anybody who got up there was booed because it wasn't their person,
right?
Mm-hmm. And that's just, it's bad form. It's not good behavior. Definitely not behavior that should be becoming of Republicans and Christians.
Yeah, we should be respecting one another.
Right. So that's all going on. Now, you know, let's get to the real meat of this and what takes place with the platform, because, you know, that was, you know, when they did take over, when it came to the chairman and all of that, and they put their person in place and they appointed their people and, you know, finally got the meeting moving. We elect the delegates to the national convention, you know, the electors for the electoral college, all of that was done first. And then the platform. Now, the platform to me was probably the most important thing that we would do in the state convention, because it is identifying us, what we believe we say we are as Republicans. And I believe that this faction, the real reason of why they, what they really wanted to get to, had to do with the platform,
right?
And what they wanted to do with that. Now, the rules was passed before. We've talked about that a little bit. One of the rules they tried to change was making it where you didn't have to distribute your amendment ahead of time. So that meant nobody could read it. They wouldn't know what's in it. And I spoke against that. You remember, objected to that and said, no, this is the Nancy Pelosi way of doing things. We don't just say, let's rush this and pass something and then find out later what's in it.
Right.
They're always complaining about D.C. doing that, or even Jefferson City doing that. Right. For instance, like, how many times have you had people complain, why do you have these omnibus bills? Why can't it be single subject?
Right.
Which I agree to.
Absolutely.
And they're always complaining, don't pass these omnibus bills because it might have something bad in it. Don't do it in a quick way. And most, you and I always are doing that. Like, we are saying, no, we're not going to vote. If it's an, yesterday, actually, we voted on an omnibus bill and I voted no.
Yeah, I did too.
Simply because it got too many things on it that were not good and said, nope, not doing it. We do that all the time, every year, many times.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
of course, most people wouldn't recognize that. They wouldn't know it, frankly. But
this was the exact same thing they were trying to do with this platform. They were trying to load it all up very quickly without very little debate, very little deliberation on this.
Right.
No time to really vet the words and what was going into those amendments. And so they ended up voting. We did vote down the rule and say, okay, no, we will have to distribute all the amendments. So that was a good thing. So then we move into the amendment process where they now, you know, voted down the proposal for the from the platform committee and said, no, we're going to open this up and allow people to make amendments from the floor.
And by the way, just what I've determined, it's never happened in my experience, and I've only been there, been involved since 2012, but I've talked to others who have been involved longer than I have, and they don't know that this has ever happened, that a convention has rejected the proposed draft
from the platform committee.
From the platform committee. Now, we've added resolutions, which are kind of a way in which things kind of percolate into the platform body over time, potentially, if that becomes a well thought
idea,
whatever it is.
Yeah.
So, but that's the process we've used, and that's the process that has been the deliberative process for since anybody can remember. But this time we rejected the platform at large.
So I will mention here too. So when you open that up, where you can, anybody can make an amendment and anybody can speak then on that amendment for and against, 3 minutes each. So that's 6 minutes there on each motion.
Right.
That makes it drawn out long time. Now, I've heard a lot of people from this faction make the complaint that it was the establishment, or that it was even you and I that were speaking on some of these amendments and bringing some procedural objections to certain things, because rules matter.
Yeah.
And we voted on those rules. That we are the ones delaying it, which is simply absolutely not true. Even some of what they wanted to do by opening this up delayed it just as much as anything else that day.
Right, exactly.
The other thing is, there have been people saying that you and I were working together.
That's an interesting concept. I was thrilled that you were there. And the fact of the matter is, I did talk to you a couple of times during the day because we're friends.
Right.
You know, and I just chatted with you a couple of times. But to say we were coordinating, that's crazy.
It's false.
I've texted you over the course of this legislative session. I don't even know how many times.
Yeah.
I mean, probably hundreds of times. But I don't think I texted you once.
Not once.
The whole day. I was focused on the amendments that were flying in front of me that I was trying to figure out what they were, because they weren't well distributed.
Yeah.
And fortunately, the biggest one that they had, that had 27 amendments that they were trying to pass all at once.
Yeah. An omnibus slate is what it was.
Yeah. Which people you know, hate those kinds of things, and I do too. Yes. And I hated that one.
I did. But, so we were consistent.
Yeah.
So they were not.
That seems to be the case, but nonetheless, you know, I was just trying to figure out what was before me, so I could either support it or not. And to be fair, actually there, and I don't know for sure, I can't remember exactly, but there were several that I actually voted for.
Yes, me too.
whatever the amendment was, even though it didn't fit form and style right. of the party platform.
It wasn't egregious enough to say, I object to it.
Yeah. So I went ahead and voted for some of them. But most of them, I didn't because of whatever their reason. It might have been just simple form and style. It might have been a simple, you know, whether I thought it had broad support in the Republican Party, which it obviously didn't because it didn't come from multiple CD. I mean, that whole thing was already understood that it didn't have broad support. But nonetheless, the people that showed up in that room all felt like they wanted to stand together. They were an army together, and yep. power makes might.
you know, or
might makes right, or whatever that statement is.
For you know, for good or bad, here's the thing: it was an example of democracy.
Yes, it was.
Who had the biggest army?
Yes,
right. That's just the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
And democracy has its problems at times, right?
It does.
That's why we're not a democracy.
Yeah, that's where
we're a democratic republic.
Yeah, the founders were very reticent to having a democracy. And in fact, I think one of the features of the Republican Party is that most of us understand that we're not a democracy. And right. pure democracy is dangerous.
It is dangerous.
And in fact, that's what we were we were practicing in this convention.
You know, again, there was amendments being made, being debated. We objected to some of those. Some of those we supported. You know, I spoke on several things. I spoke on several procedural things, point of order, saying this amendment was not properly distributed according to the rules that we had just passed.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then what did they do? They overrode that point of order right. and said, well, we'll just send it to a vote of the people, which means they had the larger army. So they won the day.
Sure.
And they just passed an amendment then of what they just agreed that should have been distributed to every member.
Right.
So again, very inconsistent
right.
in principle. Mm-hmm. And that's what we had objected to. It wasn't necessarily the content of a lot of it, it
right.
was the procedure mm-hmm. and that rules matter. Now, the other thing is one of the amendments I did vehemently oppose, and that was number 16, which I think was one of the very reasons why this has all actually happened,
mm-hmm.
and that is what has become known as the vetting amendment. And I'm just going to read it,
okay,
for the sake of sure. Being clear about this and what they were trying to put into our platform. So it says this: the MRP, Missouri Republican Party, supports these things in order to maintain the integrity and the branding of the Missouri Republican Party and fidelity to the principles of this platform. Every candidate, so that means anyone running for office as a Republican in the state of Missouri, county,
right.
city, I mean anything mm-hmm. that is under the Republican name, every candidate shall sign mm-hmm. a pledge. No option, no may, mm-hmm. no maybe, but shall sign a pledge to our platform. So again, the very thing, this omnibus list of amendments that they're adding up, and we can't really read them. Nobody's been able to see those things, and they're shoving into the platform. Then they're going to say, you're going to turn around and sign a pledge to that you wholeheartedly support it.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those amendments were actually even contradictory,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah.
So let me go on. Subsequently, in office, every office holder shall maintain a voting record that demonstrates a preponderance of compliance to our platform and upholding his or her oath of office. I don't really have any problem with that part of it.
Although, what's the definition of preponderance?
Oh, exactly. Is that? I mean, what's the percentage then that you would have to comply with?
Because
that's really what that's
one?
Saying. Like
is
most
that,
of it,
75%,
right? It doesn't say
90%, 85%.
I think preponderance. I'd have to look up the definition, but it kind of means like the majority of. You know,
so 50% plus one.
It could be.
If it was just 50% plus one, that's a pretty low bar.
That's a low bar.
In fact, I would tell you. We don't let people in the conservative mm-hmm. caucus that are anywhere
nope.
close to 51%
nope.
of the voting record.
Exactly. And then the last sentence in that says this. This is the most egregious part of it. Failure to maintain compliance then with this platform or failure to uphold his or her oath of office, which there's already repercussions for not upholding your oath of office. But anyway, says shall result, again, another shall, in his or her disassociation from the party by non-acceptance of the filing fee. So what they're saying is then there would be a small group of people who would vet you and who would say that there's not a preponderance, whatever that is, mm-hmm. right? We've already established that's very ambiguous, mm-hmm. Of you upholding the party platform. And then, therefore, we're not going to accept your filing fee. Therefore, we are going to prohibit you from being able to run for office, even though maybe your people in your district that support you, who know you mm-hmm. and know your character
right.
and know what you stand for, wouldn't be allowed to vote for their candidate for office.
Right.
That is not an American idea, Dan.
It doesn't seem like it.
It's not at all. That's something you would see in Russia or North Korea or one of these other countries that try to really determine who it is and hold their thumb down on those that they don't want mm-hmm. To be leaders mm-hmm. in their country mm-hmm. and in those offices. So I really vehemently opposed that. I stood up and opposed it and said, this is not what we should be doing. Here's the other side of this. And I don't know if anybody's ever thought of this. They should have if they really vetted this. What happens if the party moves in the wrong direction and becomes in the leadership of people that begin to put things in the platform in the future that we would disagree with and our constituents would disagree with right. and then say, you have to abide by that.
Right.
Then we would be violating the very fundamental thing of representing our people and being a public servant as we should be.
Sure. Anytime we establish an oligarchy to be the judges of many things, it puts us in a dangerous place. And in fact, that's why I think we're kind of misdirected when we focus our attention on this idea. I've been an advocate of letting all Republicans select their standard bearer without interference
yes.
from Democrats and independents.
Right.
And that, to me, is
a much better way of vetting.
A much better way of vetting.
Right.
But I haven't clouded my success with getting people to even embrace that idea. But that's how I would rather
but
see
but
it.
But here you would have a group of people who I don't know who they are. I don't know their character. I don't know. And they would be the ones determining that, and that I think is dangerous for so many reasons. So that one is the worst of the amendments that I saw that were offered that day. Most of the rest of them I could live with. Mm-hmm. That one I think is problematic in so many different ways. Now, they would make that, and they even said this on the microphone when I objected, that this is what the establishment, legislators who don't want to be run out of office would say, mm-hmm. right? Which is absolutely ludicrous. It really is. But I get the frustration, but mm-hmm. again, misdirected frustration. Instead of the ones who have been advocating for vetting in a way with
right.
closed primaries and all the things that actually I think would address their frustrations.
Exactly.
They're going after us instead of going after the moderates who don't agree with closed primaries
right.
or don't agree with, better ways to address those frustrations.
Correct.
Right? So ultimately, what takes place is they try to put all these amendments in. It gets down toward the end. People are leaving because it's 12 hours,
yeah.
right? People are hungry. They want to get home. They don't want to stay another night. There's many, many reasons
sure.
why people were leaving. I think there was only three people left from my area, and I was begging people to stay.
I was begging people to stay.
Yes.
Frankly, and that's an interesting thing because I've heard this comment about you and me that we were encouraging people to leave.
Ridiculous.
And that's absolutely false in every way. I don't know where they got that idea, frankly. But I certainly was encouraged people to stay. I was disappointed when they left. I've heard it reported. In fact, I think I recognized it. I don't remember thinking it I just remember recognizing it, but it wasn't a big deal to me. At 3 o'clock, people were leaving.
Yeah.
And so
that was before we even started on the platform.
That was before we started on the platform. At 5 o'clock, I noticed because we changed from going from the delegate selection and those kinds of
yeah.
things into the platform. I noticed because there was kind of shift in what we were doing from the floor.
More people left.
Basically, more people left. A bunch of people left
yes.
at that point. Actually, I think not just what might be considered. Those who were supporting what was going on the day, I think some of those people left, as well as those who were not as supportive of what was going on in the day. And so at 5 o'clock, I remember thinking at the time, I don't think we have a quorum in the room.
Right, which is a problem.
Yeah.
Because again, rules matter. And part of the rules are if you don't have a quorum of the verified voters, the delegates that were supposed to be there, or alternates that can fill those delegate seats, you cannot conduct business.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is why that's in the rules, and it is for the House and the Senate too, right? Yeah. This is government in general. Even a city council meeting, you can't do business without a quorum.
Right.
You know, whether that's 5 people or 100 people, or in this case, you know, 400 and some people or whatever it was at the state convention, you can't do business because then it's not representative of the rest of the body of people that you're there to actually represent.
Right.
Right. So you noticed that and you went up to the microphone. And
at 5 o'clock, I noticed it, but we were going into the platform at that point. And frankly, I was totally focused at that point at trying to figure out what in the world we were voting on. You know, what were these amendments? You know, what was I going
to
be?
I was paying attention to that as well.
I mean, I really didn't think. I noticed that we may not have a quorum in the room, but it basically left my mind because I was so focused on the fact that we were dealing with these amendments. And so I didn't really give that any consideration till much later in the day. You know, in fact, I guess it was about 7:40 when, it was really late in the day. Yep. And there was absolutely no way. I mean, there was a handful of people in the room. I think there was, I'm not certain of the number, but somewhere in the 200s. Mm-hmm. I mean, we started out with over 800 in the room, so we should have had over 400
So we really had about a quarter or maybe a third.
Yeah,
maybe
a third, whatever it was, but it was much less than what should be deciding the state party platform.
Yes.
I mean, a handful of people should not do that.
No.
And
so that's what happened. You made the quorum call, which is a privilege motion that is in order, and that means you have to count all the people there. Mm-hmm. We did that. We counted them, and then we took the number up, and then they actually said, people are moving around, and we just need everybody to sit down, and we'll count it again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I said, hold on, did we get a count, and this is a recount, or did we not get a count? And so I was trying to clear that up. She didn't actually give a good answer to that other than we're doing it again. So we did. We counted them again, not a quorum, which meant they had to adjourn the meeting. And whatever was on the table that hadn't been voted on by the body, which was that omnibus slate of amendments to the platform, hadn't been finally voted on yet, which meant it died, which means effectively we go back to the 2020 platform of what we had then. That's that's
intents
all we can do.
That's what we got.
That's all we can do. Purposes. So that's kind of how it ended. Now, In my opinion, the way I was looking at this, I was happy with the end result because I thought it was the right thing and the best thing according to the rules, according to we as conservatives, based on principle, ought to be thinking as to the end result. Because I would much rather have the 2020 platform knowing that it had been vetted well and that we had all voted on it then. Rather than this omnibus slate of amendments that had many problems in it that I couldn't put my name to saying I support all these things, right? So at the end, we're walking out. I celebrated with you a little bit there, you know, put my arm around you. We had, you know, and again, people were taking pictures and they put this on Twitter and saying that, you know, we were just celebrating that we had destroyed their, you know, what they were trying to do. And what's funny is, again, it's hypocrisy. Like, they celebrated when they upset everything and they won the battle of the coup and put their people in place. They were celebrating and they were fine with it then.
Yeah, you bet.
So it's not okay for us though, you know, to give each other a high five and win in the end, I guess you could say. That's their thinking. Mm-hmm. But I think what's funny about, not funny, but what is interesting about this is that, again, the platform is essentially what we agree on as our identity as Republicans. And it's very telling to me that the coup failed at doing the most important thing we were there to do, at being able to agree on our identity.
Right.
And I say that because in my opinion, it's the same problem that this faction of a group has outside of this. They change the definitions of words. They many times manipulate their definitions, just like the left do, that we're always railing against.
Exactly.
And they were unable to define us as a party. And I think that's very telling because I think they have trouble defining their own selves when it comes to some of the terms that they use for themselves. So, you know, that's something that I thought was interesting. There's a lot of misinformation going on about this, and you and I have been the brunt of that just because we felt compelled, because we are consistent with what we believe.
We're grassroots people, right? Yeah.
And we saw what was happening and that it was dangerous, and we were compelled to try to do what we had under the rules, under the authority of the rules, with Robert's Rules of Order to push back against that and at least bring to the microphone, you know, a differing opinion. Hey, hold on, we ought to think about this. This probably shouldn't be rushed, or whatever it was, right? Yeah. We felt compelled to do that. It wasn't organized. We weren't working together. It was just something
I didn't
that,
communicate with you and determine we were going to, you take this one, I'll
we
take that one.
We happened to be there, and we couldn't let it go in that direction because of principle.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
And to be honest with you, and I think you might feel the same way too, you know, I direct my life by what I perceive God is moving in me to do. Now, I get it. You know, everybody who's a Christian, many people say those kinds of things, and I probably fail at it often. You know, I probably don't do it perfectly. But certainly everything I did in that room was out of a sense of responsibility, out of a sense of trying to express my closely held beliefs, basically, in the best way I could in the room.
Right.
Now, I was obviously not successful in the in each one of those debates.
Right.
And I'm kind of used to that in the House because, you know, oftentimes when I get up to speak, if I get up to speak, it's usually pushing against the wave of that's coming at me, frankly. Right. It's never I'm usually not speaking in along the frame of the river that's flowing. I'm pushing back on the flow, and so
I can relate.
I know you can, and we've both been there. You better than me. Actually, I'll just commend you. You're one of the finest, in my opinion, speakers and gentlemen with rhetoric. I'm not nearly as fluent as you are, but I still have a heart for this stuff. I have a purpose for this stuff, and sometimes I feel it's important to speak against things that I think are wrong.
Yes, and there have been times, and you know this, and we've just got a couple minutes left. There have been times where we have done this, you know, obviously we're always opposing what the left is doing, what the other side of the aisle is doing, because it's just insane.
Right.
Right. And then many times we find ourselves opposing the moderate side of our party because some of those ideas aren't what conservatives and Republicans should be doing either.
Right.
And then now we're fighting this other faction that's trying to come at us from a different angle, saying that they're grassroots. We're not. We're the establishment. Mm-hmm. We're the rhinos. We've been called rhinos this week, by the way. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
That's interesting to
me.
And I think it's kind of funny because there's a lot of people who literally were laughing out loud as I came into the building this week saying, I never, ever thought I would heard someone say Ben Baker and Rhino in the same sentence, but they have, you know.
Right.
And these are people that are kind of on the more moderate side, but I still have good relationships with them because I think that's important as well, being respectful and having those relationships.
Right.
But they know it's ridiculous, right? So again, people throw out these terms, and I think they're becoming more meaningless as a result of that.
Sure.
Because what matters, again, is the truth. What matters is principle. And if you don't have that, you don't have anything.
Yeah.
And we can't legislate or do business like this simply because of emotion, even though people are frustrated. So, again, what I want to encourage our listeners to do is that, like, look, just like Dan and I, we've both admitted we're frustrated as well with all these things when it comes to politics, when it comes to the political arena today, we're frustrated too. But direct your frustrations to things that actually move the needle toward addressing the problem, the real problem, whether that's volunteering, whether that's running for office, you know, and don't point your arrows at all the wrong things or the wrong people.
Right.
Like in this situation, I think if many of these people were to find the people that they agree on most things with, this would have been very different.
Yeah.
I think we would have got a lot of good things into the platform. We would have adopted a platform And I think it would have been great.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't be such the embarrassment that we have become in the state of Missouri. I think there's actually a possibility that we could even get our delegates thrown out by the national convention. There's that possibility. That's how serious it is.
Sure.
And so those people back home that came to those caucus meetings, their votes then would be thrown out and not counted toward the presidential election, which mm-hmm. is unreal.
Yes, it's
to
crazy.
Think about. Yeah. But those are, again, consequences of not thinking through your actions and what you're actually trying to accomplish with your frustrations. So, again, I appreciate you coming on, Dan. We're up against a break, a hard break, because I've got a committee meeting coming up that I have to attend. But I appreciate you coming on and kind of talking through some of these things and I think setting the record straight of what is the real truth about what happened with this, because I think it matters. And I think that people... I think there are people out there who also believe that it matters. Mm-hmm. There are people where cooler heads are prevailing, where people are level-headed, thinking that there is a matter of principle here. Mm-hmm. And that's what we are appealing to.
Right.
Like, if you have any shred of the ability to think through these things and not see some of the problems that took place, even though, you know, again, and I will admit this, one of the good things from this, if there is any, that is... The people who are frustrated did send a message, mm-hmm. right? That, hey, listen to us.
Right.
Hey, pay attention to us sure. over here. Don't mm-hmm. just disregard us. Mm-hmm. You know, don't have your elite attitude that, you know, you don't care about what we have to say and that you're the only ones that matter. I hate that kind of attitude.
I hate that too.
That elitism is not, it shouldn't be a part of our party.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, sometimes it is. And so I'm saying that we recognize that frustration.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We recognize you know, that kind of attitude and that it shouldn't be directed toward those who are frustrated. But here's what my suggestion is. Meet these people. Work with these people. Ask them, you know, what you believe, how, you know, where do you stand on these issues? Mm-hmm. And then most of the time, like you and I, if somebody contacts me and they say, hey, this is what I'd like to see done, this is what I'd like to see worked on, we're more than happy to address that and say, look, come and help me.
Yeah.
Come up to a committee meeting and speak. Sure. You know, go with me to these meetings in my district. You know, there's so many things that we would help facilitate those people who are frustrated to get involved and actually move the needle toward addressing the real problems.
I certainly welcome anybody talking to me personally on any of these issues. I would rather a conversation rather than these social media crazy things we say about each other. Anybody could call my office at 573-751-8636. That's 573-751-8636. My LA will make an appointment and we'll actually have a conversation, whether it be on the phone. I'd rather it be in person, but if you're in somewhere else that we can't do
right.
that, I'd be happy to even have a conversation. We might even have a Zoom together. Who knows?
But and
I'd rather do that than have some kind of crazy conversation.
And I feel the same way, Dan. My office is always open. My door is always open. 403A, people can come by here in the Capitol. If I'm in district, give me a call. Give me an email. I will meet with you.
Right.
I will talk with you. I will address those issues that you're frustrated about, because it's probably more than likely I feel the same way
right.
that you do about
right.
those frustrations. But instead of pointing at each other, we've got to realize we've got to come together and really address the real problems.
Exactly.
And I think we can. So even though this has been a bit discouraging, there is, I think, a silver lining to this. I think hopefully in the end people will see that and that we can direct our energy toward the right things.
Yep.
So thank you for coming on, Dan. I appreciate it. And don't forget, you can go to Apple Podcasts. You can look us up there. You can leave us a 5-star review. You can follow us there. You can go to Spotify. You can subscribe. Also leave us a review on Spotify. It makes all the difference. So with that, thank you so much for following us on the Man Cave Caucus podcast. And hopefully you're just a little bit better informed today than you were yesterday. Have a great day.